This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 186, Accio Nijolmi. Hello, and welcome again to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin, and I'm delighted to be joined by my co-host and great friend, Mr. Michael Rowe. Hey, Michael, how are you doing today?
Hi, Mr. Michael Martin. I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, great. Don't you like to be introduced by your whole name, or do you want to be introduced by only partial
names? I think you should introduce me by my middle name.
Yeah, I could. I could do all kinds of fun introductions.
I'd like to see you like try.
Hey, we've got some really fun and exciting things to share and show today. Some things that exist, some things that don't exist, some things that we might wish existed, but they don't yet. So let's dive right in.
Let's do it.
The first thing, it deals with Harry Potter. We've all been playing Pokemon Go and enjoying it to one extent or another. And there's the new Thanksgiving-y sort of stuff that's starting to hit right now. But you found a Harry Potter tidbit, a little crumb pointing us in the direction of what Niantic is going to do. Tell us about it.
Yes. So Niantic, as we all know, is the maker of the Pokemon Go game and also Ingress before that. And about a week and a half ago, they announced that they are working on a new project in the vein of Pokemon Go, but set in the world of Harry Potter. They haven't given really any details on what it's about. I would imagine it, since it's supposed to come out sometime next year, that it will have a tie-in to the Fantastic Beasts, which comes out next year, about 1 year from now, as a matter of fact. I think maybe a couple of days off there, but anyway, and I could see it, because in the Fantastic Beasts they were trying to collect them, get them back into the guy's pouch, right? So I could really see a collecting game based off of the engine that was used in Pokemon Go, set around the whole Fantastic Beasts movie part D. So that's kind of the rumor. And I want to start that second half of the rumor of what it will be about, because they provide bupkis. They provide diddly squat. They don't provide anything.
Because we are free to speculate. It could be anything at all, couldn't it? It could be a spell collecting game, right?
It could be all about
learning that.
Tiddlywinks. Gestures.
Yeah, it won't be that. So it could be
3D Tiddlywinks in augmented reality. That would be really exciting. Not, he says.
Well, if it has the same challenges around throwing Pokeballs, then you never know. Try to how to get that clicky bit to happen.
So I have to ask you, are you still playing Pokemon Go? Do you have
Here and there.
Yeah.
Not a lot here and there. I look at it every once in a while. Pokemon Go has an interesting tie-in now with Starbucks, so that you can get a Pokemon Go Starbucks drink at a Starbucks facility that that uses this as an off-menu secret item, which I thought was clever.
Okay.
And I can imagine where that blending of reality and not reality is exactly where the monetization can come into play here, because if you're playing a Harry Potter game and you are a retail bookseller, perhaps, wouldn't it be neat if you could get people who are playing the game to come into your store, browse their way through the stacks to find a particular spell based on what the scanning happens for books in there, or shoot, even libraries? Couldn't that be great? And then you're rewarded with a spell that gets unlocked and allows you to either progress the story, do something interesting PvP, or do more of the enhance your ability to find the other collectibles, maybe the Fantastic Beasts idea you were thinking about. Wouldn't that be cool?
I think it'd be I think it would be cool. And, you know, given that the title of the game is, or at least the way they're promoting it, is Wizards Unite, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can see that having the same kind of team-based stuff that Ingress had, or that Pokemon Go right. has with the different colored teams, etc.
Yeah, the houses, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because you mentioned the monetization tying it to like Starbucks. I've been really surprised on the lack of transparency in how it is truly being monetized, right? Especially around, you know, tying things in. Because there are certain restaurants when I was having a little bit of time to play with Pokemon Go that would always have a Pokestop, right? And you could collect power-ups, etc. But I'm wondering how much of that is just data collection and historic from Ingress, and how much of that was truly being tied to Pokemon Go. And then I started thinking about it. And if you think about Pokemon had one audience of people who liked the whole Pokemon franchise, and Harry Potter probably has somewhat of a Venn diagram overlap, but not a 100% overlap. So now they're bringing more people, or have the opportunity to bring more people into the world of these augmented reality games. And by doing that, being able to collect significantly more information about physical location of people playing the game, the types of places that they frequently visit, and then the ability to take that same data and maybe sell it back to the Starbucks to say, hey, we believe we can drive, you know, higher price drinks by doing these off-menu drinks for these Harry Potter players or these Pokemon players. That's a really interesting business model, but it's not completely apparent that that's happening yet, but I can see it happening soon.
Sure. And when you think about it, the game itself does not require you to put money into it in order to play it. So
the monetization,
or it demonetizes the player. That we've said this lots of times, that when you're not paying for a product, you are the product. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm just going on, while you're focusing on the dark side, and that's okay, I'll focus on the light side. Pokemon Go had a terrific impact on people actually getting out and walking and going places, not so much to go places, but get a little exercise so that you could hatch those eggs and get the surprise that you wouldn't know exactly what kind of Pokemon would come out of the egg when you walked the kilometer or two or 10. I could see where the Harry Potter example could be something really cool that has you go to bookstores and libraries or any place where there is the written form available. Shoot, you know, maybe even a newspaper vending stand, you know, it could be the Daily Wizard, and you have to check that every once in a while to see what might drop into the virtual world for you for that. And that could be a really neat stimulator to get people more engaged with reading. And
well,
not
I can
just
definitely see that, you know, to tie it into, you know, the newspaper of the wizarding world, etc. I mean, tying it into things like collecting data around live photos, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, Apple has live photos on iOS. I believe there's similar capabilities or tools on Android, etc. And again, these are, and I'm not trying to sound like the dark side, but there's huge value in collecting information from those pictures, right?
Sure.
And so tying it in of you going to your favorite Starbucks and you have to use the live photo, right? Kind of like a Snapchat filter to show movement, which could then provide additional information, improve algorithms around facial identification, all kinds of valuable data that comes from this without just monetizing through Pokeballs.
Yeah, exactly. And that was why when we looked at the Fortune article that we saw just a few minutes ago in the pre-show, that the notion of Pokemon Go bombing as a game to me kind of makes me chuckle, because the number of people who installed it, and by installing it, agreeing to share data about them and their environment and where they go, where they are, and all, and so on and so forth, doesn't mean that they didn't, you know, just because they didn't buy a bag of Pokeballs doesn't mean that there isn't value in monetization that's happening there. 100 yeah, million times it was downloaded in 33
exactly.
days.
Exactly. And I, after rereading the article again, it's so naive, right? It's funny, because the other day I was going through my video library as I'm rebuilding certain things on my NAS, and I rewatched the South Park episode about freemium games, right? And just getting the 1-2% who get addicted to the game is a great way to fund and make tons of money off these games in the traditional pure value of the game and monetization method, right? But as we've described many times, and we continue describing this, there's so much more value in the data and other monetization that can happen because of this, that's where it gets interesting.
Yes. And even if you say that perhaps Pokemon Go was a financial miss, which I'm not really willing to say, it was a learning experience, and it was really the cornerstone, the first big mass market example of augmented reality that people can relate to. And there's value in that too.
Yep. Yep. So.
Yeah. So very cool. Super interesting. And we'll wait and see. And maybe between now and then, we'll come up with several other major franchises, you know, Star Wars, Firefly, Star Trek, lots of different things.
As much as you and I both love Firefly, I don't know if that's a major franchise.
No, it's not. But actually, I don't love it because I haven't even watched it at once. But there are people who care and they like it. Well, what are you going to tell you, right?
You've not even watched it once?
Nope.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, well, maybe
that's
over
like a -2 on your Greek cred. Your geek cred just dropped by 2, man.
Maybe, but at least I know about it, so that I should get credit for that.
Okay.
So,
2.5.
Continuing on the the augmented reality space, and picking up a theme that we had from a prior show too, we've been talking about how augmented reality, virtual reality, could be used for glasses and fashion on more than one occasion. And this article caught my attention. I wanted to see what you thought of it too, where Warby Parker, the startup that is putting the lenses and frames business a little bit on its ear, a little bit different, is using the new capabilities that Apple has introduced with the iPhone X to provide recommendation for eyewear based on the face mapping that Apple has embedded in it for security purposes and taking such a detailed map of the face. What did you think of that?
Yeah, this is actually interesting because the point that you were just starting on the security aspect, I've been following the security aspect for some time and a lot of discussions, and there's no... The belief is, and I have no data on this yet, but the belief is that the AR kit and true depth camera information that is provided to third-party apps is not anywhere near the level of what is used by Face ID for obvious security reasons. Otherwise, you might be able to then infer the Face ID unlock capabilities by having a rogue app. But I think the basic premise of what they're trying to do here is exactly what Face ID and the True Depth camera is designed for, and that is the ability to have a good enough map of the facial contours in order to provide valuable information to the application to do something neat with. And in this case, to recommend certain glasses that fit your shape of your face and the style of your face. I think that's cool. I can't wait to see more apps doing this. At the September launch announcement, right? You and I were watching that, and they were showing what you could do in theory with Snapchat, right? Better face mapping for things like the Mexican wrestling masks, right? And
the luchadora masks. Yeah.
Yeah. The masks. I have not seen apps really take advantage of that yet. Then again, I don't have an iPhone 10. I've played with it. I've got a couple of friends who have them. I don't believe you have an iPhone 10 yet.
No.
And so I see the
not
potential.
Me personally, anyway.
I see the value here, but it'll be neat to see what other things come out. This is, for me, the Warby Parker example is purely a no-brainer. This is exactly what they were doing with other glasses, try-on stuff. This is a no-brainer. I think this is great. And if I get somebody who has this app on their phone once it's available, because they talk about in the article it's not quite available yet, I will gladly test it out to see, because I have an eye appointment next week and I might need new glasses.
Ooh. Well, it actually is, and I was reading through some of the comments of the 9 to 5 Mac article here, too, and actually one person was concerned about the security aspects and asking Warby Parker whether or not the data from the face scan was transmitted to them or not, and has an email correspondence back with them saying, nope, it is not.
Yeah, so, well, what it says is that the iOS app doesn't actually map the glasses on your face.
Right.
They just provide recommendations.
Yes.
I want to see it map them on my face.
Yes. And then have an augmented reality experience where you turn from side to side and you can see how those, you know, cool looking glasses work with those massive sideburns of yours or
no,
whatever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was going for the mutton chop look.
The mutton chops.
Very cool. Awesome. That's exciting stuff. I can't wait to see it in person.
Yes. Me too.
And once I think they add the feature of actually putting it on your face.
Yes. Which is a logical next step, right?
Yep.
You know, here it is. This is what you would look like. Don't you look cool? Share that with your friends. They think you look cool. Buy the glasses. Ding.
Yeah.
So moving along and into our superhero section of our show for today.
Superhero section.
Incidentally, there's some good superhero films, I understand, that are in the movie theaters right now. But we're not talking about movies. We're talking about Thor's hammer. And you found an example video of a real version of this flying around.
Yeah, so this is really cool. About 2 years ago or so, we talked about on this show This one guy, what is it called? Sufficiently Advanced is his YouTube channel, where he had designed a version of Thor's hammer that you couldn't lift. It was stuck to this giant metal plate that you stood on without paying attention mm-hmm. to see if you could lift it. You couldn't lift it. And basically, he put a fingerprint sensor on the handle that you had to know where it was, and it had to match one or more sets of fingerprints that he had mapped onto it, right? So that was kind of cool. Well, what other cool thing does Thor's hammer do besides only be lifted by somebody who is worthy? It flies back
and lets you fly around with it.
Throws it at somebody, right?
Oh, yeah.
Throws it, smacks him upside the head, and then it flies back and Thor catches it rah, in his dramatic superhero pose. Well, so the same YouTube channel decided to go out and try to create a version of the hammer that would do just that. And the video is really funny because, let's just put it this way, that was a lot of work. So he takes the hammer, and the hammer itself is now a very simple 3D printed shell of the head of the hammer. And
right.
Inside of that is a quadricopter. And then the bottom of it has, you know, the handle. And what he does is he created a set of flying controls that were kind of like the Spider-Man web-slinging hand presser. So
right.
that you could control it with his right hand without being obvious about it. And he throws the hammer, and it's thrown kind of in a very straight up and down mode, so it kind of flies away from him. And then by using controls in his right hand, flies it back and catches it. Eventually.
eventually. Yeah, it takes him a little while, doesn't it?
It takes a long while. I can't remember when I was watching the video if it actually has the time zone, the time stamp, how many tries it was. But the one final one where he actually throws it and you see it comes back and he catches it. And then he shows the outtake of the final one where, yeah, he caught it, but the top of the hammer flew off.
Yep. Yep.
And so it's hilarious. I think it's funny. But what's really cool, as the famous saying goes, any sufficiently advanced technology would look like magic. This looks like magic. It's awesome.
Very cool. Now, speaking of magic and sufficiently advanced technology, you found yet another example. And that other example is of a real life Iron Man flying contraption, I'll just say. So yeah. Tell us about that.
In that same theme of the Avengers, right? Who's another Avenger? Well, Iron Man's an Avenger. Well, we've seen for some time now people who try to do like flying kits where they really have like a water jet that shoots out from underneath them and they're hooked up on some kind of tether and all that stuff. And it's kind of like, meh, right. That's not Iron Man. Well, this guy, and I've seen videos with this guy in the past, but what he's done, it's a company called Gravity Industries, is he's creating a single-person flight suit that is truly jet powered. And the biggest problem with jet powered flight by humans is stability, right? Because we have flexible joints and our muscles are not necessarily strong enough to hold off the pressure of, you know, hundreds and thousands of foot pounds of pressure going through your arms. But what he's done is he's designed this backpack that has, I think it's two or three. I can't, looking at the picture right now, I can't tell if it's two or a third. And the middle one is actually where his hand is. I think the middle one is where his hand is protected. But it's right. These jets that are on a ring around your forearm. And your hand is protected in a metal casing that he uses to hold down below him, just like Iron Man. If you think when Iron Man would put his hands down to the side and flick his arms down to the side and flick his hands out and use the repulsor rays in his palms to push up off the ground and fly. Well, that's what this is. It actually is real jet engines attached to his forearms. He's wearing a helmet, he puts his arms down to the side, and then the jets lift him off the ground, and he goes skittering across a lake. It is awesome.
Yes.
And he's now created a Guinness World Record of flying that.
Amazing. Yeah, he and gets the fact up that it's over a lake, I think, is also really cool.
Yeah, it's
cool
kind of key. It's kind of key.
Yeah.
These are six small kerosene-fueled micro gas turbines. So it is three on each arm. And he got up to 32 miles an hour.
Yep.
That's just awesome. Have I mentioned that is awesome?
If you want to know where your flying suit is.
Right there.
Now you know. It's right there. So... moving from human-powered capabilities to fully robotic, let's turn back again to our friends at Boston Dynamics, right? So this is the company that's had all kinds of interesting robots, and this particular example that I noticed earlier today, and I think you had as well, shows one of their robots, the Atlas robot, which is a humanoid robot without head. They seem to be going without heads for most of the robots.
It kind of has a head.
It's short.
It's got a little knob on top.
Something like that. So, but it demonstrates using parkour to jump from block to block, higher, lower, and eventually doing a dismount in the end and maintaining balance all the way
Not
around.
Not just a dismount, a backflip dismount.
A backflip dismount. So, to me, pretty cool.
Well, absolutely. And if you look at it, the the motion of the arms on some of the hops and the flips are so human.
Yes.
I mean, the key thing, it's a bipedal, humanoid-shaped, self-contained robot that can jump, it's like 16 to 24 inches. I think the last one's 24 inches. I think it's like 12, 18, 24, or some distance like that. And holy crap.
Yeah, it's really quite incredible the way it's structured and doing what it does. And it shows what can be done with robotics, you know, whether it's playing music or jumping or modeling what it might be to be a dog.
Yes.
Which was another example of our Boston Dynamics environment, the Spot Mini. Yep.
Mini Spot.
And you know, I'm going to throw this in the show notes here too, but I took a look at a sword master, one of the samurai trained capable people doing a slice off with a robot as well. And I was just absolutely impressed with how the robot managed to mimic all the examples and what this guy has spent 18 plus years training his way through and doing it with ease and very simply. So,
well, it's interesting. I remember, robots. Gosh, 3, 4, 5 years ago when they showed for the first time a robot that learned how to mimic your behavior. So traditionally in robotic manufacturing, you had to do a lot of programming.
Right.
To say, okay, move the left arm joint up 3.2 centimeters, rotate 16 degrees to the left, blah, 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 blah. And you actually programmed the complete manufacturing process. And the breakthrough some years back was, no, we added visual controls and other sensors, and we are now mimicking the physical movements of the human laborer who did this job as a way to quickly train the robot to do the thing. And when you look at the way the Boston Dynamics jumping backflip robot is behaving, it looks human. And I'm wondering if that's how they trained it.
You know, it could be.
It could be.
It could be. But that's kind of the whole test automation structure here too, right? You know, so with test automation, the most powerful elements here allow for mimicking, observing what a human does, and then being able to do it faster.
Better, faster, stronger. We can rebuild it.
Yes. So moving right along about things that could or might not be rebuilt, we have some artificial intelligence that's designed to thwart people that are causing other people problems with email scams. And you found this really interesting Futurology article about one such way of combating email scammers.
Yeah, this was actually a Reddit thread that I started following, and then I, you know, went down the rabbit hole a little bit. And they have a video that kind of represents what happens. But what this is, it's a group of research scientists that are trying to increase the cost to the email scammers, thereby hopefully reducing scams. Right? Because the incremental cost to send it to one more person right now is zero. So the way you find the 0.001% of the people who are dumb enough to respond to the email scammers is by looking for responses. So if you could flood them with responses that are done by an AI bot to where that incremental cost goes from zero to something significantly higher, the hope is that you will stop or at least dramatically reduce the amount of email scams out there. And it's funny. It's kind of like, I'm trying to remember. I think it was last summer there was a guy who was doing a thing where he created an automated set of recordings that would handle phone scammers.
Right.
And react and say, oh, wait a minute. Sorry, I think there's a bee in here, right? And just keep them on the phone as long as possible to try to do.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is kind of the same thing, but to engage them. And what you do is if you get an email scam, you forward it to this email link that's called out by the company, and they then take over it and start interacting for you. So hopefully it doesn't give away that it came from you, thereby letting them know that there's a live human at the end of the scam, and therefore now we know we can go after somebody else, right? just like answering your phone. We've gotten to the point we don't answer our phone anymore, right? Every call is screened because we, even though we're on do not call registries and do not call lists and all this other crap, the amount of phone spam and scam that comes through is so high because even thing that I used to like doing of answering and then play with them, all that does is guarantee that the phone number is valid and put you on a list to get more crap.
There you go.
So if this somehow doesn't guarantee that it knows that the email they sent it to was valid, right, then it might be good. I find the idea is interesting. I want to see if it actually reduces it.
That's too funny. That is way too funny.
Yeah.
I'm just, again, you know, going through this particular article. It's just, or this Reddit piece here. It's very, very funny that then you just have a bot do it and you're done.
Yeah. It's hilarious.
Hey, well, look, we are getting ready to wind this up for today. We did mention movies a little bit and we talked about some superheroes, and you had one that you found that is not superheroes. It's more of like super animals.
It's super silly.
Well, it's that too.
You and I were talking before the show. Both of us remember dropping many, many coins in the video arcade game Rampage.
Yeah, or playing it on console.
Or console,
even
yeah.
More. Yeah.
So the great, and I think I have a version of it on my iPad.
Mm.
So the basic idea of Rampage was a cityscape and gigantic creatures. Giant gorilla, giant wolfman, giant lizard man are destroying the city by busting up the buildings and making them collapse. And you are one of those creatures in the game, and you've got to bust up the buildings to go further and further into the game. It's one of these never-ending games that you're just constantly tearing stuff up. And guys in helicopters try to shoot you. You eat people to gain health, etc.
Right.
So fun game. Like the game.
And.
So now there's a movie coming out next year with The Rock, or Dwayne Johnson as his real name is. And they try to give a backstory. Dwayne Johnson is the hero?
Yeah, that's kind of what it was looking like.
And basically, I think he's like a... some kind of worker at a zoo, and some kind of evil growth hormone stuff or space junk or whatever falls, and this rare white gorilla eats or gets exposed to it and starts growing and getting bigger and bigger, and he's trying to save it even though everybody's attacking it, and then a wolf also gets it, and it ends with all we need now is a giant alligator. And, of course, you see the giant alligator coming out of the river in Chicago.
Oh, that's too funny.
This will be a great movie to watch, no matter how bad it is, late at night with an adult beverage or four and some junk pizza and a group of friends sitting around having fun with it, I think.
Yep. Maybe. Or... maybe,
or it could just be even worse than that.
Maybe this is one you're going to watch as a double feature with Snakes on a Plane.
Ooh, that's a good idea. So, anyway, yeah, lots of fun. It could be fun. It could be horrible, but we shall see.
Yep. Well, good finds.
Yes.
We hope that you, our listening audience, has enjoyed this particular episode. We had a lot of fun putting it together, and hopefully the ideas and things we shared here resonate with you. If they did, thank you. If they didn't, give us some things that you're interested in, and we'll be happy to bring them up here and chat about them on gamesatwork.biz.
Have a good one. Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.